Welcome to Aware. We are dedicated to communicating information that inspires your positive growth and change. What would you like to create in your life? Are you interested in having incredible health, or learning to trust your intuition, or finding a purpose in your life? These are things everyone would want, and Aware is committed to bringing you this information to assist you in creating a life you love. We invite you to share in this experience and become more aware.
Good afternoon and welcome to Aware. Hi, this is Lisa Garr. And this is going to be such a great show today. I've been looking forward to the show for a long time. We're doing the milk show today, or I guess I could call it the dairy show. But we're going to talk about milk mostly today. And we'll find out the difference between milk and other dairy products too. So there are health topics that I'm personally dedicated to bringing mass awareness to. And it's because you will not hear about these types of topics in mainstream media, particularly because of the corporate conglomerate model, or also where most media and government agencies are bought and paid for. So these stories that I'm going to be exposing in the next couple of weeks, most of them are going to be things that you will definitely shatter your model of what you've known to be true before, because a lot of the facts that we've been told in terms of health products and health and so forth are not necessarily true. They're just not. The things we're going to be exposing, wheat, vaccines, soy. So let it be noted that anybody who is out there that might be experts in these fields, we're carefully screening experts in these fields on vaccines, wheat, and soy. We're going to do entire panel shows on those, so you can email me at lisa@theawareshow.com. So we're going to start off this whole campaign, this health campaign, to expose health topics, and we're going to, of course, kick it off with the subject of milk. One of my favorite subjects, vaccines is a close second. There's been a lot of controversy around dairy products. Government agencies say they're good. Health industries say they're bad. They're toxic. I'm going to let you decide. We're going to give you the facts today on the show, and now you decide the information that you want to extrapolate from it, okay? So we have a very capable panel, terrific panel today. First person that's joining us is Dr. Vojani. He is a microbiologist with expertise in clinical immunology, but many other things: early detection of cancer signals and markers, immune function disorders, immunotoxicology, chemically induced immune deficiency, and autoimmune diseases. These subjects he is regarded as either an inventor in, or he holds more than 12 different U.S. patents and has published more than 80 peer-reviewed articles. Dr. Vojani was also responsible for the exposure of major pinnacle turning points that we've had in terms of our health here: the exposure of the chemical agents on the veterans who fought in the Persian Gulf War, otherwise known as the Persian Gulf Syndrome, Gulf War Syndrome. He also provided the facts exposing the toxicity of silicone implants, and also about the cancer-causing agents in octane gasoline. You see those little labels on the gas pumps, the MTBE labels. Dr. Vojani was responsible for bringing a lot of those and identifying those cancer-causing agents, and also the effects of malathion. He's really been in the news a lot. And welcome to the studio, Dr. Vojani.
Thank you, Lisa.
Nice to have you with us. A true expert and... what is the name of your laboratory?
Immunosciences.
Right, lab. So lab testing is a daily thing for you.
That's right.
Currently in the field. Mark Levendale is also joining us. He is a health researcher who developed the Quality Longevity Program, which reveals underlying causes of many health symptoms. He teaches and gives seminars on the importance of testing. We've talked a lot on the show about testing for food allergies and allergens in the body. He brings about a lot of awareness for these kind of delayed food and chemical allergies. So welcome to the show, Mark Levendale.
Nice to be here.
And then joining us as well is Mark McAfee. Mark is an organic pastures dairy farmer. That is the actual name of his farm, Organic Pastures Dairy. You might have seen his products in Whole Foods markets. The Organic Pastures Dairy products are actually the Whole Foods number, I think they're the leading dairy department dollar volume leader. So they're doing very well there. Obviously have been tested and scrutinized, and your products are raw, organic, grade A milk.
That's correct.
Raw milk. So, and then from pasteurized
It's not pasteurized.
Pasteurized. From cows grazing on pasture.
That's correct. They're grazed every day of the year on green pasture all year long.
Nice life. So those are the real happy cows, right?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm going to just start off on topics here. I'm going to start with Dr. Bojani. And just to get kind of a scientific background on what the body's reaction to milk is. Now, here's so people have an idea of where the perspectives are here. Dr. Bojani is a scientist, an advocate of milk. However, in various people, in specific bodies, it's individual. Mark Lovendale, who's the researcher, is not an advocate of milk, has no scientific evidence proving that milk is any good for the body, and also talks a lot about how the dairy industry basically buys and pays for all of the advertisement out there. And then Mark McAfee is here to talk about the organic raw milk and that aspect of the whole thing. So I'm starting here with Dr. Bojani. What exactly is the enzyme in the body that breaks down lactose, and how does it do that?
Well, the enzyme called lactase. It breaks down two molecules of sugar, and then the body absorbs those. If individuals who do not have lactase, they will not be able to break down lactose, and then lactose gets accumulated, may cause some symptoms of allergy, and the end result will be diarrhea and many other factors.
Now, does everybody produce this lactase?
At early birth, almost every person produces lactase. And therefore, every one of us, yes, we can handle the mother's milk, the breast milk, because also we need lactase in order to break down also the mother's milk.
The mother's milk, okay.
However, due to some genetic makeups, for example, in Asia, you know, somehow after age one or thereafter, that enzyme somehow disappears, and therefore they lose the capability of digesting the proteins of the milk and the sugars of the milk.
So now, is that true in every single... In every single body?
In about, I would say, 70% of Asian, you know, they cannot. It depends from ethnicity to ethnicity.
Cannot
digest milk, yes.
Milk, okay. Yes. So what you're basically saying is not every single body is allergic to milk, right?
Yes, yes. As far as allergy, then, you know, that's a different issue we are going to talk about. One is lactase deficiency is different from allergy.
Oh, explain, okay.
So lactase deficiency, that's genetically, that, you know, as I said, something happens, there is a program within that we don't make lactase anymore at age one or two, and therefore we cannot tolerate milk. The allergy is if you are drinking milk and you react to proteins or any components of milk, you may have four different types of allergies. Type 1, which is IgE mediated, you drink milk few seconds after that, you have reaction on your skin or on your eyes, whatever, you know, in your stomach. That's type 1 allergic reaction. Type 2 allergic reaction is dependent on different immunoglobulins, antibodies, such as IgG. Type 3 depends on immune complexes. When you have antibodies with antigen form a complex together, that activates many, many other molecules in our system, and therefore those immune complexes become harmful. In fact, immune complexes are responsible for kidney dysfunction, kidney damage, joint in rheumatoid arthritis, and so forth. And finally, type 4 allergic reaction is delayed type hypersensitivity. What you can drink milk now, but 4 days later you have reaction on your skin. So we are talking about four different type of allergic reactions, which may happen in about 5 to 10% of the population.
Okay, so 5 to 10%. All right, so now Mark Lovendale, who wrote an article called Your Health and Dairy Products, reveals in the article that that you did a study of about 8,000 participants where you tested the white blood cells against dairy products, that are exposed to dairy products. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, one way to test for the type 2, type 3, and type 4 allergic reactions that Dr. Bojani was talking about is by testing a person's white blood cells, because when we eat a food that's not compatible with us on these delayed allergic reactions, that inside the body, it actually causes the white blood cells to break down and release very destructive chemicals from inside the white blood cells. So what we have done is we have a test where the small blood sample is taken and the white blood cells are combined with microscopic amounts of the different foods so that we can then watch under the microscope and see whether the white blood cells are actually killed by one food or the other. So we can find out which foods are compatible for each person's body. It differs from person to person. A food that may be great for you may cause symptoms for me.
Mm-hmm. Which is basically what Dr. Bojani is saying. It's not in every single person to be true.
Yes.
But we've the percentage of people with acute type 1 allergic reactions, according to the traditional allergists, is about 3% of the population. And they usually know who they are because they eat a food and break out in hives or have to be rushed to the hospital.
Right.
But these type 2, type 3, and type 4 are much more common. They actually turn out to be the underlying cause of a broad range of symptoms. And we have actually found in the people that we've tested them to be a significant problem in 80% or more of the people. If they have symptoms, they have some of these reactions going on.
Okay, now there's a study that's talked about in your article. This is a very commonly known study that the actual milk industry, the dairy industry, conducted. And this was in 1985. And they did the study, and their goal was to convince people who eat more dairy products that they will assimilate more calcium. This was the idea behind the study. 2-year study, 22 women they took through the study, drinking 3 glasses of milk a day, and then 22 women, control group, not drinking 3 glasses of milk a day. And they had a surprise. They found out that the women that drank the 3 glasses of milk per day lost twice as much calcium from their bones as the controlled group, those who did not. They tried to diminish the importance of the study. They kind of buried the study. It went away. Dr. Bojani, why would milk leach calcium from the body?
I honestly don't understand that. Where that article was published, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it was published in a major medical journal, and the mechanism is very interesting, because both groups were eating the normal amount of dairy products, and then the one group, the 22 women, were given additional milk. And because they were getting additional milk, they were getting additional protein in the diet. And there's a broad range of studies that show that when you increase the protein in the diet, you cause an acid reaction to develop in the body. And it's this acidity, the body has to buffer it, and it does it by pulling calcium out of the bones. And that's why worldwide, wherever people are on high calcium diets, they have weak bones. The American public is on a very high protein diet. Just the regular American diet is high in protein. And American women have trouble with weak bones. In groups of people out in the world, to take a look at the Eskimos, they're on a very high protein diet. They have the worst bone strength, even though they eat lots of little fish that have calcium bones in them, and they do lots of exercise. They have osteoporosis so bad by the time they're 40 that they usually don't live to be longer than 45, and their osteoporosis there is actually worse than Americans, which is really hard to do. And yet, if you look around the world, you can look at the Bantu women in Central Africa. They eat no dairy products. They're on a low-calcium diet. They have lots of children. And on autopsy studies, it was shown that the Bantu women have solid bones after 10, 12 children when they're 70 years old, solid bones. It's hard to find an American woman at 20 years old who has solid bones.
I read further, they took those some of the women from Africa, brought them into America, put them on the standard American diet, and of course their osteoporosis levels raised. And I read that also in the same study. But Dr. Bojani, let me ask you about this. This study, it was, I think, in the Best Democracy Money Can Buy. I don't remember where that was published. It was a while ago. It was 1985. But do you remember, Mark?
No, it was actually published first as in a medical journal.
Oh, okay.
And from there it was picked up by a few places and published, but the dairy industry quickly tried to quiet the study and suppress it, so it's not well out into the literature. But one guideline that we can go by, if you look at the people around the world, about half the people in the world eat little or no dairy products all their lives, and they have, on average, the most solid bones. The other part of the world that drinks dairy products has this problem with osteoporosis. So dairy products do not solve the problem with osteoporosis. It's the acidity in the blood that creates the disease.
And that's what I was going to ask Dr. Vajani about. Yeah. So the idea here is that the, well, you can comment on this.
Yeah.
Milk increases acidity?
First of all, I really would like to read that article.
Right.
And secondly, that's only one article. And thirdly, there are many other factors involved in here. We are not talking about vitamin D. Vitamin D and calcium works together in order to make, you know, bones strong. And, you know, maybe some, you know, those individuals were deprived of vitamin D. We don't know whether those were measured. So, you know, it's, first of all, one study, and I would like to read that. I would like to see that. And whether or not those were taking also vitamin D with the calcium.
Right.
Because it's very important to have the vitamin D. And that's why they add to the, some of the milk or dairy products extra vitamin D, correct?
Exactly.
Does milk increase acidity in the body based on the high levels of protein in the milk and thus raising, you know, and also based on a possible allergic reaction to the milk? Wouldn't those two things cause a high level of acidity in the body?
Depends from a person, physiology of a person
individual.
To person, individual. It varies. In some individual, it may produce acidity. But, you know, yes, if in those individuals produce acidity, may be responsible for some of those actions.
Okay. All right. Let's get into some of the political aspects of the dairy industry and where exactly the money is going. World Health Organization recommends 400 milligrams of calcium per day for the average human being. However, the United States government recommends 800 milligrams a day because basically the dairy industry gives money to our Congress. The studies show that the dairy industry is the second leading fundraiser for our government per year, and the second leading is, actually the first is doctors, right? So explain, Mark, you have more statistics on that.
Yes, the and where the money actually goes is to the different politicians, so that when issues come up, they will vote in favor of the dairy industry. And a great example was under Reagan, where they were trying to cut back on the number of cows producing milk, and so they put together a whole program where they would pay the farmers to kill their cows. Well, what happened was is the farmers took this money, and with that they cut back the number of cows that they were producing at the time, used the money to artificially stimulate the remaining cows, so the net effect was the amount of milk produced went up. The government tax revenues and our taxes were increased, and the problem simply got worse instead of getting better, where we have more cows producing more milk, causing more health problems.
Okay, so that's quite interesting. So they actually made more money from the whole thing than, then they have more money to give. So there was, this is something else that was kind of shocking, is that you mentioned the study at Cornell University by Dr. Campbell.
Yes.
And it showed that our Congress requires the nation's schools to buy $1 million worth of dairy and meat products per year. Requires the schools to buy that. So it completely confuses parents and kids.
Right. They actually force upon the schools the purchasing of milk, oftentimes that they have bought from dairies, to artificially prop up the price of cow's milk. And Dr. Colin Campbell, that you mentioned, has done some very fascinating research. He is world-renowned for being one of the leading scientists in the study of human nutrition and its effect on disease. He is the lead researcher on the China study. This was a multi-year study of people throughout China to show and it showed the correlation between diet and a broad range of different diseases. And what Dr. Campbell's study showed was is where people are on low-fat, moderate-protein, high-complex carbohydrate diets, they avoided heart disease, stroke, cancer, those diseases that are an absolute plague for us. And his study, 900-page study, was supported by the U.S. government and the government of China, is a definitive study on the types of diet that are optimum for humans. He went on to study the effect of casein on the immune system. He and fellow researchers took specially bred mice. These mice, 100% of them get liver cancer. And these mice in their controlled situation are normally fed a diet that has 22% protein from casein. Casein is the major protein from dairy products. 80% of the protein that's in dairy products is in the form of casein. And what they found was is that at 22% on these special mice, the situation was 100% of them died of liver cancer. And then they took different levels of casein. They cut it down to 17% and at 6%. And what they found was a straight line relationship. The less casein they gave the mice, the fewer of them got cancer. So that down at 6%, almost none of the mice got liver cancer, and these are mice that are designed to 100% get liver cancer. So by having the mice avoid casein, the major protein in milk, whether it's raw milk, pasteurized milk, cheese, yogurt, doesn't make any difference. It's got casein in it, and that casein is a complicating and possibly causative factor in liver cancer.
Okay, Dr. Vajani, you have published an article about linking milk to autism. In children.
Yes.
And that article, by the way, if people want to look it up, can be found on comments of it can be found on webmd.com. Explain your findings in that article. Yeah.
The article was published in Journal of Neuroimmunology for last month. And the idea came from looking in the literature of MS patient with multiple sclerosis. And as you know, there is a model of mice or animal model of multiple sclerosis called encephalomyelitis. So what they took certain component, the peptide from milk called butyrophilin, and that peptide about 20 amino acids, injected to those mice, and the mice after a few months developed full-blown encephalomyelitis or multiple sclerosis.
So the milk protein actually induced?
Just milk protein.
Okay.
Just milk protein. Secondly, they also, I would like to change a little bit to the infectious agents. Also, they did different studies. They took a peptide from Streptococcus, which is causing throat infection, or from Chlamydia, which is causing pneumonia. Also, they could reproduce exactly the similar symptomatology of MS in animal model. So I took that idea and applied that to children with autism. I tested antibodies against that component of milk called butyrophilin, and I found about 40 to 50% of children with autism, they had antibodies against that component of milk. Not only that, they had also antibodies against their own nervous system antigen. So it looks like that certain component of milk do cross-react with structure of the nerve cells in the brain. So when a child with autism drinking milk and there are lymphocytes reacting to milk, if those lymphocytes or white blood cells manage somehow to go through the blood-brain barriers, which they should not under normal conditions, if they manage to go through blood-brain barriers, they think the brain cell is milk because it has similar structure like milk, and they start attacking that and destroying their own nerve cells. This is the mechanism of action. So therefore, autism and MS, these are two examples of diseases or conditions which I do not recommend at all to consume milk based on this mechanism of action, which is described in the scientific literature in the best scientific journals.
Now, are there other diseases which can be prevented by not drinking milk?
Yes, I can mention dermatitis because I explained the four different mechanisms of action.
That exacerbates.
One of them was type 4. Diabetes. Also, they found certain component of milk in certain individuals who have genetic makeup for diabetes or HLA type, can cross-react also with islet cells. cells which are producing insulin. So therefore, that's also another small percentage of people should not use milk. People who are prone to type 1, especially type 1 diabetes. And individuals who have ulcers.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, when they have ulcers, we tell them drink milk because it's going to help you. But there are some documents in the textbooks of food allergy which exactly show that milk by itself can induce some of the symptoms of ulcers. So overall, celiac disease also, which is induced by wheat mainly, but milk also can contribute to that. Allergy, leaky gut syndrome, mm-hmm. when the mm-hmm. pores get opened and everything goes through, multiple sclerosis, autism, and diabetes I mentioned earlier.
Okay, so now, Fairly, how can you say that if people with diabetes or ulcers, digestive problems, allergies, even skin disorders, if those classifications of people cannot drink milk, how is it that milk could possibly be good for anybody?
Well, we should not forget, first of all, that a cow in a certain part of the world can save a family.
Explain.
I have seen many programs. In fact, one of the programs which on TV one day I was watching by Oprah, which she brought from the Far East families, and actually she was promoting raising money to buy a cow, because that cow could help the family.
This is a world hunger issue, though.
Yeah, the world hunger. And take the milk and sell it and make money and thrive.
That's an economic issue.
So therefore, there are many people in the world that really, they're hungry, and milk can help them to grow, not to be malnourished. So therefore, there are many, many things that milk can help people. And besides, in those countries, somehow we don't have some of these diseases which I mentioned before.
Mm-hmm. Mark McAfee, you have something to say, who is an organic dairy farmer.
This has been fascinating. Listen to this technical treatise here.
Yeah.
We're talking about subparts that make people really sick, and our conventional commercial milk reality that we have right here now. And I think we're talking about pasteurized, standardized
good milk. Good point.
We're not talking about raw, organic milk like Dr. Rajani just mm-hmm. said, which is an internationally accepted, these third world countries, where you have a cow that's eating green pasture and giving that raw product directly to the family, which is highly nutritious. So we're talking about two different things completely. And I'm not a scientist, although I do have a paramedic background, so I can understand bits and pieces going on here. We're talking about two different products entirely.
Very good point. Thanks for bringing that up. So the fact that, since we're getting into that topic, explain to us about the pasteurization process. First of all, it is expensive, so yes, these third world countries are not able to afford that type of process. They go to the field where the cows are grazing, they milk the cow, they get the nutrients because the enzymes are still alive.
I hear it all the time. We're standing in front of Whole Foods. We're talking about our products with people, and they're new immigrants that can barely speak our language. And they say, we don't want to drink this pasteurized milk. We want to have the milk that comes straight from the cow. This stuff makes me sick. I want to have the real milk. And they realize our milk is the real stuff, and they freak out. They love it. They eat it. What I'm talking about here is the fact that pasteurization, standardization. Pasteurization, by the way, to answer your question.
What is it? Yes.
Is the technology that's been advanced in the last 70 years or so. That basically is a high-temperature process by which you take milk either to 165 degrees for about 15 to 20 seconds or 282 degrees for 3 to 5 seconds. That's called ultra-high-temperature pasteurization. In both cases, the goal is to eradicate and kill bacteria and extend shelf life. Those are the two objectives there.
So it's to extend the shelf life. Okay, so then it kills the good bacteria and the bad bacteria,
It kills
right?
all the bacteria. Well, I shouldn't say all. It kills the gross majority of bacteria, plus inactivates enzymes, denatures proteins, does a whole bunch of other things as a side effect of the process. And that is a deep, broad subject, and it's worthy of touching on.
So we are talking about introduction of new molecules in the milk.
You are creating a dead protein base.
That, exactly.
And to look at this, if you look at raw, especially organic milk, which has a very low bacterial level because no antibiotics are being used on the cows, and the cows have a very strong immune system, you look at extremely low bacteria counts. On our dairy, we're running in the hundreds. In fact, we post our bacteria counts on our website by CAP date, so you can look at our website and see what bacteria counts are this week on this cap.
That's transparent.
Absolutely, and it's beyond reproach. If you look at the conventional dairy systems, they allow up to 50,000 or even much in excess of 50,000 bacteria per milliliter. Well, we're only allowed 15,000 at a spike in the raw production. So by legislation, by regulation, statute, raw milk has to be extremely clean. And we run in the hundreds when they're allowed 50,000. Now, what happens when you run that milk through a pasteurizer? You have dead milk, but you still have all the bacteria and the aftermath of the heat process, which basically is going to take those bacteria and allow them to be dead bacteria but still present. And so there's still protein. Your body can react. And I'm sensing here that that's what we're talking about today is basically this process which takes a live, healthy, clean product and destroys it.
Okay, good point. Now, can these same proteins from calcium, I should say, be found in vegetables, Dr. Vojani, or beans, or any of those types of things?
Milk has unique proteins. Mm-hmm. Casein, I think it's unique to milk. No, you cannot find casein in other sources. For example, we cannot find it in soybean or vegetables. The other one is lactalbumin. Lactalbumin in milk. Yes, you can find albumin in meat, for example. But casein is very specific to milk.
I think there's one thing important here to take a look at, because this casein that Dr. Campbell was working on has been shown to be a causative factor in autism. In fact, if you go to Google and put in the two words casein and autism, you come up with 4,880 references for articles, studies, and websites that refer to the connection between casein and autism. Casein and depression, there's 3,800 references there. For casein and schizophrenia, there's 1,030. For casein and fibromyalgia, a disease very commonly caused by delayed allergic reactions, there's 736. So this casein, whether it comes from raw milk, pasteurized milk, any type of dairy product, has been shown to have a clear connection with a broad range of different diseases. One of the things that
I disagree with that entirely because of the effects of these studies are not done on raw milk. They're done on pasteurized milk. And pasteurization completely changes everything. And we've only known pasteurized milk for the last 70 years.
So they are true on pasteurized milk.
Yes, let's look at one study that was done on raw milk. Dr. George Mann went to Africa, and he studied the Maasai, who have raw milk in their diet. And he did this first study in 1962 and came back and said the Maasai were very healthy. So the American Meatpackers Association sent him back in 1972, and he did a second study to see how their diet affected plaques in the coronary arteries. And in the second study, he actually did scientific research. And with their diet of raw milk and meat and also blood and some vegetables, what he discovered was is the Maasai had huge plaques in their coronary arteries. These plaques are the underlying cause of more than a million deaths in the United States each year. They lead to heart attacks, strokes, and lots of other diseases. And the reason the Maasai didn't show heart disease in their original study is because they spend the first 20 years of their lives chasing their cattle on foot, which gave them abnormally large coronary arteries, so the plaques were not causing the heart attacks that he didn't see in his first study, but they do cause the plaques in the artery. The second study was published in a medical journal in 1972, raw milk, blood, and meat, and hardly anybody knows about it because the American Meatpacking Association silenced the study. It's very poorly circulated.
Dr. Rajan, do you have a comment on that?
The comment I would like to make is about really, if I drink a glass of milk a day and raw milk a day, how much casein get introduced into my system? I don't think we can compare that to studies in the mice, which they use very high percentage of casein. And besides, I agree with Mark.
Yes.
The casein was, in that case, denatured casein. Most of the studies you are mentioning or quoting are used denatured casein. So here we are talking about, first of all, taking some raw milk, and in one glass of milk, how much casein I'm consuming?
Well, it's a balanced. When you drink raw milk, you're not standardizing it. You're not processing it. It comes directly as somebody much smarter than all of us at this table figured out a long time ago, coming directly from Mother Nature. It's a completely balanced product. it's not standardized where you cut it into all its pieces and add back vitamin A and D, and you don't put powdered milk and this and that, and you meet the standards of some rules somebody wrote in Washington or the state of California. It is the way Mother Nature designed it. And when you put cows on pasture, you've got all kinds of other issues going on with CLA values being very, very high. And you look at, you know, lactoferrin, and you look at all the immunoglobulins that you find in milk and all the naturally occurring live things in milk, which we're not talking about here today. And so it's really been one of those things put in the back corner that nobody wants to talk about because it's politically incorrect.
But it's a,
well,
it's
I'm happy to talk about those, because when you look at cow's milk, you find that, yes, it was put together here for the growth of an animal, and that animal is a calf. If you compare cow's milk to human mother's milk, you will find they are very different. There's three times the amount of calcium in cow's milk as there is in human dairy milk. You'll also find that there's more protein in cow's milk than there is in human milk. Human milk is designed for humans. Cow's milk is designed for calves. And whenever you take a food that's designed for another mammal and give it to other mammals, it causes health problems in those mammals.
You would say the same thing about meat then.
Well, in the natural human diet, if we can look at how chimpanzees live in the wild today, we can see that a certain amount of meat is natural for human consumption. And small amounts of meat eaten occasionally are fine as long as they're not contaminated with bacteria, as long as they're well cooked. However, it's the excessive amount that we do with meat. But in our studies, we've shown that for many people, at least 80% of the people, any amount of milk, even trace amounts, much less than you'd have in a glass, you find it sets up a reaction that kills their white blood cells and underlying cause of a broad range of different symptoms.
Mark, have you studied raw milk in your program?
Yes, we have. And in fact, we actually use milk from your dairy in our test. We use your milk for the antigens because your milk does have a good reputation being free of pesticides and other chemicals. We are testing person's white blood cells against the very best milk we can, cow's milk, and we can find in the market, and we find that it is not compatible for the human population, whether it's raw or cooked is secondary.
I think there's a political agenda there. I disagree with it because we've had a lot of stories about people that can't drink milk, love our milk, and don't have the gas or the indigestion or lactose intolerance because the lactase enzyme is still alive, and they go on and on about how they're thriving and they're feeling healthy, and I disagree.
Well, I just want to mention there's, you know, the natural concept here, as nature designed it, is that other animals do not drink other animals' milk. However, other animals do eat other animals' meat. This is just survival of the fittest, nature's design.
Yeah, but the question I would like to ask, for how many years, how many thousands years,
12,000 years,
we humans drink milk?
12,000 years.
Okay, 12,000 years, so the evolution has changed us.
That's a good point.
Okay, that's number one. Number two, I have seen many patients with immune deficiencies, mucosal immunity deficiencies. If you give them lactalbumin or you give them lactoferrin, especially in milk, you can enhance their mucosal immune function, and that can prevent many, many illnesses. Mucosal immunity is our first line of defense. If we can take some raw milk and enhance that, I think that's a blessing. Finally, I would like, with your permission, to mention that the methodology you are using or you are mentioning about, they are not accepted by medical community. The four type of allergic reaction I mentioned, one of them is measuring IgE. Type 2 is measuring IgG. Type 3 is measuring immune complexes. Type 4 is measurements of reaction of the lymphocytes to the milk antigen, which they go through blast transformation. I'm very familiar with what you do. 25 years ago, I started doing exactly the same thing. But since it's not accepted by stream of medicine, and the methodology could not be backed up by IgG or IgM or IgA or IgE and immune complexes, therefore, your study is flawed because you are using a method which is not accepted. Which is not, if you give your methodology to another laboratory, they will not be able to repeat your results. So you are using a method which is wrong, and you are coming to a conclusion which you are telling, you know, the whole population not to drink milk because of your reaction.
Okay. Well, I think it's important to take a look at the methodology that we use has been significantly changed from 25 years ago. And, in fact, we do sell test kits to doctors around the world, and they do get the same results. You mentioned that evolution has changed us because we've eaten milk and dairy products for the last 7,000 years or 12,000 years, whatever number you want to use. That's a very short period of time. And when you actually go back and study, carefully study the nutritional requirements and the effects on the body of chimpanzees and the nutritional requirements and the effect on the body of foods of humans, you find they're almost identical. So we have not changed any significant amount in the last 5 or more million years. And we can learn from the chimpanzees. We need to do that. Chimpanzees never need dairy products in the wild, and they have strong bones. People in rural China never need dairy products, and they have strong bones. Americans consume huge amount of dairy products, and they have weak bones.
Now, explain why, and I don't know if Mark Levendale, you're the best person to explain this, the American Academy of Pediatrics made an official statement saying, quote, infants under 1 year should not be given cow's milk. But yet this was not a statement that was widely mentioned in any type of mainstream media. And this was when?
It was done in 1992 after 20 years of study. Dr. Oskey, a leading scientist in the field, discovered that children up till 1 year old, if they consume cow's milk, they bleed internally. It doesn't show up in the stool, but it's microscopic amounts of blood they're losing. And the reason this is so important is because when they lose those blood cells through inflamed digestive tract, it causes their bodies to lose iron. And the human brain goes through its period of rapid brain growth during the first year and a half. And if the iron isn't there, the brain doesn't grow, and it doesn't grow at a later time. It helps to explain why many older children today and young adults have not the full brain function because they were iron deficient. And there's many studies in the literature that show this.
Dr. Vajani, is there other?
I will look from different angle into this. That here, I'm quoting from a textbook of allergy and immunology. They say, yes, do not introduce cow's milk at early age. Early introduction of cow's milk is believed to be a major etiological factor for celiac disease, which is, you know, mm-hmm. gastrointestinal disorder.
Was that raw or pasteurized?
This is just general. I think it's pasteurized.
I think so.
Yeah. Now, breastfeeding along with delayed administration of cow's milk and cereal grains reducing the risk of celiac disease. So this is just a chapter about celiac disease. Why? The mechanism of action is this, that immune system, including mucosal immune system, is not mature enough. It gets matured almost for a year or the first year or second year of life. And therefore, we should not introduce all these foreign antigens, including milk antigens, to the digestive tract, which is not mature. Do not have a good immune system, is not mature enough to handle it. So therefore, that's the mechanism of action. If we'll introduce that, then when they will grow, they will become allergic to milk.
Okay, I want to just callers are asking this specific question, and a couple calls have come in about it. Is this? We're doing a show on milk essentially, and I'm speaking with Dr. Vajani, who is a microbiologist. Mark Levendale, who is a health researcher, and Mark McAfee, who has an organic raw dairy pasture. Does this apply to kefir, to yogurt, to eggs? Are we talking about dairy products in general? Or are we specifically talking about milk? Can somebody clarify?
Yeah, we're talking about milk because eggs are not actually a dairy product. They're sold in the dairy section, but they're not technically a dairy product.
They're very similar. True? They're very, very similar. When you talk about raw milk and raw eggs, you're talking about stuff that's got enzymes and all the stuff that has not been denatured. It's straight from its source. And so I think it's very similar when you're talking about unpasteurized, unstandardized, untemperature treated or pasteurized. You know, I think it's very similar.
And what is kefir?
Right. Kefir is a cultured dairy product. It's much like yogurt.
From milk.
But it's a pasteurized product, generally speaking, in the United States. There may be some out there that's unpasteurized. But cultures, specific cultures, lactobacillus or acidophilus, are added to the kefir and other cultures as well to create a bacterial environment to culture the milk and thicken it to create flavors and so on and so forth. And that's been used for thousands of years in ancient cultures to preserve milk so that it would last longer because there wasn't any refrigeration. So, I mean, we're talking about some old technologies here that are brought forward for flavor and taste.
Why do they recommend for pregnant women not to eat unpasteurized milk, cheese, dairy products?
That all depends on who you talk to. That all depends on who you talk to. You talk to government regulations. They'll say that. But when you talk to the people who live and breathe raw milk and absolutely will drive 400 miles to get it, they absolutely will not drink pasteurized milk because of all the problems we've talked about today in intimate detail. They want raw milk. They want the best quality raw milk and from a pasture which has CLA and all the antioxidants, all the other protective lactoferrins and everything that's undisturbed by man. So it's straight from the cow, literally.
I think there's really a more complete answer to that. The listeria, if a woman drinks cow's milk that has listeria in it, it has been shown to cause birth defects, or if she's nursing and consumes milk with listeria.
Now, a bacteria, right?
Yeah, it's a bacteria. And so each year around the country, not from your laboratory, not from your dairy, but around the year, each year, a number of children are made deathly ill. A few children die from contamination they pick up from raw dairy products from dairies other than your own. Because of this, there's a government warning that's on the back of your bottle. It says raw, unpasteurized milk and raw dairy products may contain disease-causing microorganisms. Persons at highest risk include newborn and infants, the elderly, pregnant women, those taking corticosteroids, antibiotics, and acids, and those having chronic illnesses or other conditions that weaken their immunity. And that's
you're right.
That's on the back
you're
of
You're absolutely right. Let me address that because it's very important to understand and distinguish the difference between raw milk from a conventional source and raw milk from an organic source, with pasture and without antibiotics, because it's distinctly different. CDFA has done literally 100 tests of our milk from the last year to find the bacteria exactly that you're talking about, Listeria, Salmonella, and E. coli 157, and have found zero, I repeat, zero, non-detect in all cases at all times. University of California has been down to look what the heck's going on down here at the dairy and found that we do not have antibiotic resistance in our cows. We are not giving our cows antibiotics, and therefore we are not building superbugs in our cows being reflected in our milk. And you have raw milk coming from a healthy cow. That raw milk is a reflection of the cow's immune system. And when we took this milk to a lab and had them introduce artificially Listeria, Salmonella, and E. coli 157, you had multi-log reductions over a time period. So what I'm saying is, our milk is not compatible with these
because
bacteria.
Of natural antibodies.
Exactly.
Antibodies, not antibiotics. Let's listen.
Well, there's antibiotics that is given artificially to cows,
right,
which can cause antibiotic resistance and cause the creation of superbugs in the cow, not in our milk. And from that, you see a mirror image of the good milk coming from these cows, which have a lot of the healthy bacteria that would not have been predisposed to creating an environment that would be preoccupied by pathogens.
So is the bottom line here that each individual is different in this case and that the testing will make the analysis for the individual body?
Well, there's really two different factors. One is the basic components of cow's milk compatible for great human health? And if we look at Dr. Campbell's studies, Dean Ornish's studies, Nathan Pritikin's studies, we see the diet around 10% fat, 10% protein, 80% complex carbohydrates is the type of diet that is optimum for humans, all humans. As a separate part, then we have the individual factor as to whether the cow's milk has something in it, whether it's the casein or whether it's an allergic reaction that kills white blood cells or some other mechanism, how that can be damaging for the individual. But on both of those counts, cow's milk, raw or pasteurized, comes off very poorly. Cow's milk is around 48% fat naturally. It's high in protein. It has a number of things that are very different from the optimum type of diet that humans evolved on and do best on when they eat today. And so besides the government warning that's required to be put on the bottle that you pay, one of the things that we're working for is to have additional warnings put on all milk bottles, saying that no children under 1 year of age should be given cow's milk. That's very clearly established in the scientific literature. That should be on all bottles of milk, both raw and pasteurized.
Do we all agree on that?
On that one, absolutely, I agree, 100%.
Okay. I disagree. I disagree. And the reason I disagree is I think that there's more than one perspective here. We're talking about elements of a large problem, and the great emotional uproar that's happened in the last few years is based on the fact we've destroyed our milk. We do not have a lot of information out there about milk, this raw,
I'm sorry,
in its natural
the issue
format.
The issue is not milk, whether natural, raw, or we destroy the structure of the proteins. In this case, we are talking about immune system, which is not mature. When we'll talk about vaccine, but I will have the same idea. Mm-hmm. When the immune system is not mature enough and you are introducing a foreign antigen into the system, it's going to change the balance of the immune system. And the imbalance of the immune system results in disease.
So we're talking about infants and breastfeeding mothers.
Right.
Specifically.
People drink our milk to build their immune systems. The people that are actually warned against drinking our milk are drinking our milk right now and building their immune systems and having incredible response to that.
I agree with that. The leaky gut syndrome and all the other things. In fact, mentioned that raw milk is good for immune system.
Exactly.
But not before the age of one, because the immune system is not mature enough to handle all the foreign antigens in the milk.
And where I differ is I say that cow's milk, because so many people are allergic to it, and you don't know whether you're one of those people unless you've been tested, that it should not be consumed by not only infants, children, or adults, and that cow's milk in any form, raw or pasteurized, has a number of inherent problems as far as the immune system is concerned, and there is no proven value in drinking cow's milk. Of 2,000 medical studies published over the last 10 years, not one of them found that cow's milk was essential for human nutrition.
Well, there was also the dairy slogan, Everybody needs milk?
Yes, that slogan was struck down by the U.S. Supreme Court because what they found is that not everybody does need it. So they switched a little bit, and now we have these ridiculous milk ads where we have celebrities getting $25,000 to have milk put on their lip. These studies are promoting a product that is falling in usage because of the damage it does to health. And for our government to be in there supporting that, it goes back to a time when our government used to give cigarettes to children, to soldiers in hospitals. Giving the cigarettes to hospitals is the same thing as promoting dairy products today.
Well, we did ask the California Milk Advisory Board to be a part of this this panel, and they actually declined to comment and said that there wasn't anybody that would actually, they had to represent the Milk Advisory Board on this particular show. However, what I am finding is that we are talking across the board, of course, pasteurized, non-organic milk with BST, antibiotics, pesticides, hormones is completely toxic to the body. This is one thing we all agree on, yes.
We all agree on that, okay. I believe. That regular milk is not safe and needs to have warnings on its label.
75% agrees that it's not good for infants, and they should put a warning label on it, right? With respect to you, Mark McAfee.
I respect the doctor's opinion because I think there's some analysis he's done that I'm not aware of.
I appreciate that.
Okay,
thank
great.
You.
Okay, and also the other milk products that are involved that are kefir and yogurt and so forth.
Yeah, let's not forget that really we have the best probiotics, lactobacillus acidophilus, and these are anti-cancer. These bacteria, beneficial bacteria, enhances our immune system. They can fight cancer cells. They are especially good for colon cancer.
The lactoferrin is...
But can't you just take the probiotics by themselves without getting them involved?
Yes, you can take it. Absolutely.
But here's the thing. Where does it come from, and is it processed? And it's highly processed, and it's not in balance. It's, again, a piece of something versus a whole thing which is in balance with itself.
It doesn't have to be highly processed in order to just cook out the bad bacteria.
Actually, when you start cooking out bacteria, you start doing all kinds of things because you start denaturing the balance of things.
They don't actually cook out the bacteria. What they do is they take the very best bacteria from mother's milk, and then they culture it so that you have very high counts of it, so that in one tablet you have the amount of bacteria that you need that you would have to drink 60 gallons of yogurt to get, assuming that it was a good type in the yogurt, so that you can get the type that you need.
We're talking about food here, not pills, and that's why people like drinking pasture-fed, balanced, not messed with milk that comes straight from the cow that's cold chilled, that only lasts 14 days, and it sours instead of putrefies and does all these wonderful things. So it's
well, I also
a different
do
product.
Believe that it does. It is also based completely across the board, based on individual testing of your individual body, whether or not you are lactose intolerant, and whether or not your body develops allergens to the milk product.
Yeah. I agree for those individuals who are lactose intolerance and also individuals who have allergy, other diseases which we mentioned before possible, unless they are tested. If they are tested by the correct method, I disagree with the method which Mark is using for testing people.
The white blood cell method?
The white blood cell method is not a reliable method. And that's why he finds such a high percentage of people are positive.
By the way, the lactose intolerant people, they drink our milk because there's still lactase in it. It's an interesting thing about lactose.
So if individuals who are tested with the right method and they have antibodies against components of milk, and those individuals should not drink milk. If they do not have those antibodies, blessing, I don't have those antibodies and I like to drink milk.
Well, okay, I think it's important to note here that not only are we finding this, but other doctors who have worked in this field for more than 40 years. Dr. Theron Randolph, the pioneer in this field, found that over 80% of the people were allergic to dairy products with this delayed allergic reaction. And it's a type of allergic reaction that traditional allergists don't understand, and thus they are against it, because when people get this awareness, they don't need to go in for skin tests or allergy shots. And if your listeners would like more information on this, they can go to our website at preventivecare.com. They can also, we'll be happy to send them a free information booklet on it.
To wrap this up, Mark. Go ahead.
They can reach us at 949-661-4001 and get all of the scientific studies and support that back this up.
Okay.
They're all laid out in my book, Quality Longevity, and I hope people will take responsibility for their own health.
All right, and also people can just test their own bodies by taking milk out of your diet for 2 weeks, seeing if you notice a difference in mucus levels and so forth, and then putting it back in, seeing if you notice fatigue levels and so forth.
In fact, there was an article published.
We have to go. We only have 1 minute. Okay. But you can check out the websites here for Dr. Bojani are immunosciencelab.com. For Mark Levendale, preventativecare.com. And for Mark McAfee, McAfeeFarms.com, McAfeeFarms.com. And you can also, if you're driving, check all of this out on theawareshow.com, www.theawareshow.com, and all of our information is on there. Thank you so much for joining me in my panel.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. While I'm committed to bringing you the clearest information possible, in the end, I always encourage you to listen to your own truth. Until tomorrow, I invite you to stay aware.